Hello, hola, buenas.
Hola,
¿cómo están? It is the Chancleta Generation Podcast. Yes. Hola, cariño, ¿cómo estás?
Bien, mi cielo, ¿cómo estás tú? Encanta verte.
A mí también. One more time.
Yes.
Welcome back, everyone. Yes. I am Clemencia Herrera, and I run an advertising agency that speaks to Latinos in the U.S.
And I'm Cecilia Del Cid, environmental and social justice practitioner, immigrant from Guatemala, Latin American, and community weaver.
And also the expert in the topic that we are going to cover today. Yes. Because our girl here, Ceci, she's got a degree from nada más ni nada menos que Yale. Cuéntanos. Tell us more.
So, well, I do. That's kind of like my background. I have an environmental science associate's, and then I have a biology degree, and then I have a master's in forestry. So a lot of the work that I've kind of like focused on is like forest ecosystem, but that was kind of some of my work, and a lot of the work I've done had led me to like environmental justice, which, you know, like moving a little bit from a hard, rigorous scientific background with lots of labs in my life to thinking a lot more about how systems work.
The practicality of it, right?
So, yeah, I do think of myself not as my scholarship is not like to produce a lot of knowledge very up here. I think I'm a practitioner, and that's what I feel the area that I feel most comfortable in, like working on the ground with people, taking care of environments that have very
awesome,
very close lives to the places they live in.
Yeah. Yes. So this is one of the reasons why we're covering this topic.
Yes.
But not only just because Ceci is an expert, it's because this is a topic that people are kind of like brushing under the rug, or like saying like, oh, how am I supposed to like think about this, or like, why should I care? And, you know, we are starting to see that more and more people care because more and more people are being affected by it. Yeah. According to a report by the Yale Program on Climate Change, which Ceci might be familiar with, people of color in the U.S., including Hispanics and Latinos, African Americans, and other non-white racial ethnic groups, are more concerned than whites about climate change. Mm-hmm. Over 70% of Latinos in the United States are concerned about the environment.
Yeah.
And so, let's talk about this. Vamos a chancletear.
Yeah.
Why do you think that they're more concerned?
Well, let's take a step back. I think that many of us, so there's issues in, you know, when you think in the context of the United States, the topic of climate change has been very polarizing. I think we see it as a less polarizing issue. I think we understand it. We're very concerned about it. There's a lot of statistics about that isn't, you know, they tend to think that the Latino, which is the second, the largest minority voting group, is not concerned about it, that we're concerned about economics or immigration policy or public health or, like, you know, medical, health insurance, health issues. We are really concerned. I think that many of us have become, well, there was times that we left our countries in Latin America because of war or other political instability. Right now, we are leaving a lot of our countries because of climate change. There is a lot of people who are leaving, at least if I speak from Guatemala, that are climate refugees, that they are leaving Guatemala not because it's insecure, but because they are people who depend on the land, and depend on being able to harvest, you know, to produce from the land. They're deeply connected to land, and that the changes that are happening systemically are causing people not to be able to have a livelihood. So I think that that we're concerned about those things. There's some information, like Latinos are more concerned about global warming, and we recognize that it's happening because of human action. Mm-hmm. We're worried about, you know, the great risks. We understand, we perceive greater risk and are more supportive of policies that address mm-hmm. climate change policy. Mm-hmm. And we're getting to get we're willing to be politically involved. Another thing that I thought was curious is that even though Latinos that speak English do that, Latinos who speak only Spanish, Spanish language Latinos are even more engaged than English language Latinos. Mm. So that's what
that
I'm thinking.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So if you see the numbers, when it's just Latinos who speak only Spanish or mainly speak Spanish, they're more, which tells you that they might be newer immigrants to the United States. Mm-hmm. Right, like a lot of the Latinos.
So they were affected by climate change back home.
There is okay. also other dynamics. There is dynamics within the country where our communities land when they come to the United States, and there are dynamics that are global, between the global north and the global south, between developed and developing countries, there are different terminologies, between the global majority, you know, where are the most people in the globe living right now, and who has been most affected.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but I mean also, I mean, if you think about it, a good chunk of the Latinos in the United States are working class, and mm-hmm. Whenever climate catastrophe happens, a lot of them may not have insurance to have a new condo built mm-hmm. or whatever, like more wealthy people may have. And so losing their house to a fire or to a flood mm-hmm. is devastating. It's absolutely devastating, and it could set, or a hurricane, exactly.
Or,
and
yeah,
it could
tornado.
Set you back years, you know, and so this is not just or even the energy prices, like mm-hmm. If it's getting hotter in the place where you live, then you have to pay more for AC.
Yeah.
And same thing if it's getting colder or for there's heat. More snow, or like I don't know, like when there was snowstorm in Texas happened, what do you do? Do you have the funds to, have a heater, to buy a heater, to buy an AC? All of these are, to a lot of us could be like, oh, well, I gotta buy an AC. But it's like for some people, it's money. And it might not be, it might not be attainable. So it's a real, like now it seems that people are kind of feeling it in their pockets too. It's not until, people just like it falls on their head that it's like, oh.
I think that, you're in a point, like we tend to care about things that begin to affect us personally. And I think that that is why, we as a group, Latinos, Latine, Latinx, like Latinos, we have experienced it. We have experienced it where we're coming from, and we are experiencing when we get here. Because we also arrive here and we tend to live in neighborhoods or do jobs that have other risks associated with climate change, that are more affected for climate change. And we're going to talk a little bit about the impact. But I wanted to say that even though we seem to understand the issue of climate change, that doesn't mean that we specifically understand why we would use a lens of justice, of environmental justice. And even what does that mean? Mm. And one of the things for me that as I was kind of studying, and I've said this in other spaces, I feel like I've received, when it came to scientific background, like a first class education, right? Like I've gone to great institutions, I've had great professors and great colleagues, but it took me to leave that space to understand and acquire the knowledge and the language of justice to understand why systems of oppression have caused the crisis and how they are linked to like extractivism, capitalism, gender inequalities, imperialism, class, that, you know, all those systems have been impacting how we use our resources, who benefits from our resources. So if we think of climate change, we think there's a carbon budget, there's a carbon cycle, and we're thinking the countries who have benefited the most, who have caused the most damage, will not be the ones that will suffer and that are suffering the highest impacts of these changes. Mm-hmm. Right. So the countries.
Yeah, I mean, what you saw what happened in those floods in Afghanistan.
Yes. Yeah. So it's countries
like
who
a
didn't.
A third of the country was flooded. Like a third. Yeah. It was absolutely devastating. Devastating. Yeah.
So, like, if you are in a country that had a very low carbon footprint, you didn't contribute. You didn't benefit. Your economy didn't grow. Your population didn't benefit. And you are at the door, at the front of having to experience the climate change impacts, the detrimental impacts. So I think for us Latin Americans, we also live in areas that are high flooding, in areas that have low canopy coverage, in areas that experience higher air pollution and water pollution,
in
areas that could be in vulnerable to higher like weather events, you know, we have in California, and it's something that covers the whole country from California to the Northeast, right? Like we have fires in California, we have droughts, and then we have flooding. We have in Texas, we have droughts, and then we have snowstorms, and then you have deep hurricanes. You have also flooding, then you have Hurricane Ellie. You know, that alley that used to be very predictable, Tornado Alley. It's moving, it's shifting. So we, you know, also covering the big, like, plains of the country, people who had never seen these huge storms. There was huge storms in, like, Kentucky and Tennessee really recently. Mm-hmm. And, like, so we are experiencing these and these things at the forefront, and like, so you know, there is like a definition by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency in the United States, the La Agencia de Protección Ambiental, and it's very much based on kind of like legal, you know, it's like the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, income, with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement on environmental laws, regulation, and policies. So I think it's very much grounded in kind of like the legal infrastructure of the United States. And if you think of justice, not everything that that is legal is just, right? Also, not just.
I think this deserves like a, you know, like a quote, like a design of a quote, and we put it somewhere.
You know, like not everything that is legal is just, and also,
love it.
We are not also talking about justice for the environment, right? Like, it's not that we want to protect just the environment and want to keep it pristine and wild, because that leaves the people who has maintained the environment for generations that depends on the environment. It excludes it. It pushes people. It displaces people. And that has happened too in the name of protecting the environment. We know we have indigenous communities in these, you know, a lot of the national parks, which then, you know, used to be managed by native communities and belong to native territories, have been excluded. So when we think of environmental justice, I think we have to be a little more expansive, and also because it's, you got the right to participate or you have a fair treatment, doesn't mean that what you are bringing to the table is going to be taken into account to actually make the policy decisions, right? So it might be that, mm-hmm. yes, come on over, sit over here, we're going to hear you. And we're still going to do what we're always done.
And then we're not going to do anything about it.
Yes.
Well, right? because in many cases, from my experience, there's got to be a really significant financial motivation for this to happen, or political motivation, you know? Like, oh, are we going to lose votes? Okay, so they were going to do something. Is there something to gain from it, you know, in terms of like corporations or agencies or things like that? Is there something that we can gain from doing something like that? Yes. Okay, let's do it. Otherwise, it's like, you know, it feels like it's throwing money out when really it's like it's very short term thinking.
It's very short term.
You know, of like if you're thinking, you know, what is in it for me now, then that's the wrong way to look at environmental justice or environmental anything. It's like, you know, it's not even necessarily like a long game, because we are, aren't we good in the point of no return in like 5 years or something, like by 2030 or something like that? So it's not really short term.
Yes.
So we're all going to be alive by the time it's going to be within our lifetimes. So this is, but you know, people just keep thinking with their pockets.
And the thing is, like, you cannot breathe money, you cannot drink money, you cannot eat money.
Right.
You know, there is a lot of people, like, there is a slogan, like, there is no planet B, right? Like, there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a couple of things that I am, you know, that from the points that you're making. Once, I'm very proud that you know this about the IPCC, because I find that most people don't realize that this report has been come out there, and it has a big threshold, and that's the most recent report. It came out this year, and it's been coming out recently, and they're like, you know, like Chicken Little, like, the sky is falling, and it is falling. And
like, I mean, girl, why you think we do this podcast?
I know, but you know, the thing is, like, I talk to people who care about this all the time, and I think that it feels like a big, like, science feels really big, and they feel like, I don't understand, I'm not even gonna look. It's important things, right? Like, we are.
Oh,
very
I know.
Close.
People are like an ostrich, you know, con la cabeza. I'm not even gonna look. I'm not looking.
But, like, you know, if you have children, if you have grandchildren, what world are we living in? Like, water is going to be a big issue, not only in the United States, globally.
Mm-hmm.
Water has been. But if you think about, like, when the initial thoughts about environmental justice started in the 70s, that's 50 years ago. And for 50 years, for more than that, but, like, at least for 50 years, we've been kicking the can down the road, saying, well,
from generation
it's going
to generation.
Cost us money. You know how much money we spend in the military budget? It's so wild that we cannot even, like,
audit it. It's wild. It's like the most out of the federal budget is the biggest chunk.
Yes.
It's the biggest thing.
Yeah. So there, and also,
let me tell you,
mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that at some point, you know, climate change is going to bring on unrest, like
it's already
military,
bringing it.
Like military unrest, like it's going to cause a war.
There has already been water wars. Bolivia already had las guerras del agua because of private extraction and need, like communities, local communities being like, you know, the water resource being like denied to them. It's already happening in Chile with like corporations divert water. We also are having it in the United States. When you think of like the work that Latin American people do or Latinos do, the diaspora does in the United States, we work in construction, we work in agriculture, we do a lot of labor that happens outside. We are going to lose the most amount of money because we will not be able to, the heat is going to be so intense, we will not be able to have the same length of days of work. Because you will not be able to work outside.
Yeah. I mean, here in Boston, that, you know, I remember when I moved here 11 years ago, the summers were warm, but they weren't unbearably hot. Last year, we had a few days that we were at 100 degrees, which it's unheard of. Like, people were just like, what is happening? You know, like, plants were dying in the gardens, and it was, and also, like you said, people couldn't go out. No, the city workers, they couldn't go out to work. Those are inhumane situations in which to work. So it is already happening. And this is costing, actually, this costs the city a lot of money. If people are just sitting there without working, that costs them money because you're paying them to not work. So it's so even if they don't want to spend the money up front, they have to spend the money in the back end at some point. So, you know.
And I think also, like, but at some point there's things that you cannot pay money for. Like, you know, when a child has asthma, and we know that because we don't have tree coverage, there is more air pollution. That has a very health implications, have costs as well. We lose money. You know, we lose money in not working. We also have more traffic. If you have flooded areas, that increases traffic. That increases a lot of other things that, you know, damages to property, which are also losses and insurance. So, like, there are very, very high economic costs to not adapt into climate change. But I also think, you know, I always like to think beyond, like, the economic policy is, like, there are things that you cannot replace. Once you lose your health, there might be not enough amount of money you can throw at it to recover it. Once your loved ones have died of heat stroke, once you cannot produce a crop because your soil is so stressed and, you know, and and desertification is advancing, there is not enough money you can throw at the problem to remediate it. So I think that there is things that's what I think, thinking of environmental justice as the lens to look at the problem is the right approach. Yeah. Because it allows you to think about who caused the problem, who is living with the consequences of that problem, and also, how do we address those consequences, right? So,
But I think it's like, it's important to understand who caused the problem, but, you know, but I think mostly just to see, like, how we can stop the problem, but not, like, you know, I don't think that is, we don't have time to start pointing fingers and be like, oh, you're terrible. It's more like, okay, you know, this is the problem, let's fix it.
Yeah.
And so it's more about identifying what, you know, how to fix a problem rather than those people are evil.
I don't think it's about determining, like, using shame or, like, saying that people are evil. I do think it's important about recognizing that there's a certain number of corporations who are responsible for the majority of the emissions that are happening, and that we have to move beyond decarbonization and start actually thinking of real solutions. Because it's like, you know, decarbonization is like, if I'm in a relationship and I pay you not to cheat, but I can cheat, but if I pay you enough, you don't
you
cheat.
Mean like that when you're to offset,
I'm gonna offset my cheating by paying you. So you cannot cheat. I can cheat, but I pay you every time I cheat. So that, because you accept my payment, then that means that you and I are square. Estamos cabales. Our relationship is good because I offset my cheating by giving you money.
Man, if anybody out there identifies with that analogy.
Like, that is what carbon offsetting is. I get to cheat, I go around and I sleep with whoever I want to. You cannot
and
cheat.
Here's your diamond ring or whatever.
Yes. No, again, I pay you. Every time I cheat, I pay you a certain amount of money. Yeah. That is not how it works, right? Like, no. The idea is that we eliminate those things that are causing
I just love your analogies. Your analogies are always great.
And that one is a friend shared it. Like, I don't remember when I heard it, but I thought it was so clever because I was like, that explains it so good to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you'd be like, no. Cheating is cheating. It doesn't matter how much money you pay me. That doesn't erase your break of trust and whatever. Like, if you're in an open relationship, good for you. But you talked about it and you came to some agreements. But like,
right.
You know, but like, so for me, it's like, what are the issues that are causing? So you said something that is very important. It's important to understand where the causes are. So when you say we have to identify who are responsible, is because their practices have not changed. They continue, even though the emissions fell during the pandemic, the emissions have gone up. And our communities continue to be in the front lines, continue to be receiving the injustice of not consuming as much or have to consume things that are not that nutritious, to be exposed to toxic. Our communities receive toxic. When the climate justice movement started in the United States, it was a clear link identified that if you wanted to know where toxic sites or waste sites were being placed, you had to look at race. Mm. Black communities and Latino communities. It's been proven. People would drive through neighborhoods and think, this neighborhood is too affluent. No, we cannot put up. They would not even consider them to place these sites. But our communities who are already vulnerable, who have a lot of limitations, who don't have
a lot of clout,
they will not organize to prevent them. And that is changing. I think we are willing to get involved and fight.
So tell me how. I want to know how. Well, what do we need to do? Go jump.
I think that some of the things that we need to do are definitely like, you know, I am a skeptic of trying to think of like the individual actions, even though the individual actions are important. Things that we can do, I think, is get together in like a community garden, learn how food gets grown, grow some of your own food, consume local food. Because if you are buying food that is being shipped from very far, you are also, that has a cost in energy and carbon emissions and, you know, fuels. We need to begin to think about how do we get involved with your communities locally? How do we get our houses to be, like, connected to clean energy? The energy democracy is important.
Yeah.
Putting solar panels
and
is expensive.
Can I mention? Do you remember when we did the Inflation Reduction Act? Mm-hmm. There are some tax breaks and help.
Yes.
That President Biden implemented to get renewable energy in your house.
So there is a lot of funds right now. There is a lot of funds in your communities as well. So if you, for example, things that are happening in Boston, like there are communities that if you wanted a tree planted in your front yard, and buying a tree sometimes can be $500-$600. Like, it's not cheap. But they will come, they will give you the tree, they will give you training. Other things that have happened in my city, for example, there is a compost program. So when we cooked, they collect it, and instead of that being to an incinerator and causing more pollution, now it's being if it's organic, you know, waste from the kitchen is being diverted from. So get involved in your city.
We have a service like that, but that's because I'm, you know, I'm a gardener.
Yeah.
I'm a gardener person.
Yeah. But even learning to garden is important.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it also has a lot of mental health benefits.
Yeah.
Being in nature. Being in nature is healing.
Yeah.
We need it. So I think that also we as Latinos care, because a lot of us come from rural areas. Or even though I grew up in Guatemala City, I was deeply connected to El Campo de Guatemala. Like, the forest in Guatemala, that's what I came to study forestry. And I think a lot of the people who grow things from the ground, like, I appreciate the people who, like, you know, somos hombres y mujeres de maíz. Like, somos gente de maíz. Like, that imagery is really important. I think we're deeply rooted and connected to the ground. And that happens here, too. Like, so I think that those are
other
issues.
I mean, it's the food that we eat.
Yeah.
It's the food that we eat.
And it's the food that we eat. And I think we're willing to get involved. We just have to recognize. And also, what you are saying is, like, time is running out. And climate change is here. Not everyone, if you have certain class or access to economic resources, you might be able to put it off for a little longer. But everyone will be touched by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of like, I feel like, you know, some people might have fatigue. It's like, oh, we have to care about all these things.
Yes.
You have to care about social justice and environmental justice and this and the other thing and the books and the education and the it's exhausting. There's a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of things for people to care about. But
I do think
the food that we eat and the place where we live, like, we can't have everything else if we can't eat and we can't live somewhere. We can't have anything else. These are basic necessities. And, you know, the planet where we live, we've just been living in it, just not even, like, being conscious of, like, you know, of what it's giving to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like a given, you know. Oh, yeah, it's like we plant something, it grows, and then we eat it. And, you know, but it's like, but what is that, you know, what does that consist of? And, like, how it's not ever lasting, and there could be, it could fail. And so, you know, like, really realizing the fact that, you know, if this fails, like you said, there's no planet B, but there's also no plan B. Like, what are we going to do?
And, you know,
when half of your country is flooded and all your crops have failed, what are you going to do? And if you are in, like, you know, I understand that people in the U.S. are like, oh, we're in the, you know, richest country in the world, we're in a position of power. But it's like, yeah, we're in a position of power. But if one of the most powerful countries in the world has an issue, who's going to come?
Yeah.
Who's going to come?
I also think it's like, we shouldn't have to, like, in that's when thinking of empathy and, like, collaboration and, you know, justice and, like, equity. It's like, how do we make sure, we talked about this before, and how do we make sure that we all have enough resources to live a dignified life? And I've always said that there is enough economic resources in this world, because it's a made up thing, money's a made up thing, make sure everyone has what they need to live a dignified life. I'm not saying that everyone has to have the same. I'm saying that everyone has enough to live a dignified and thriving life. What we do not have is enough natural resources for everyone to live at the level that the developing countries live. If every person in the world live the style of the middle class of the United States of Europe, we will need 5 planets.
Yeah.
That tells you that.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, you think about India, you know, if the whole population of India rose to the, you know, to that kind of consuming, then we're in
we can't.
We're in deep trouble. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't. They should. They absolutely should. And I want them to.
Mm-hmm.
But then we need to adjust the way that yes. we think of how we live.
That is the point that, you know, like we that have consumed for a long time or that mm-hmm. have had a lot more resources. And that's when I said, you know, sometimes capitalism are like thinking, why do we, for example, fast fashion. When you think of a t-shirt costing you $5,
mm-hmm.
there is a cost of someone who had to, for that to make financial sense, someone was exploited somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So also the amount of water that it takes to raise that cotton, and then you're going to waste it, and where that waste is going to go. We can no longer purchase, use, discard in a linear way. We have to, and companies and or corporations and every single one of us has to start to think about the cycle that is a circle. Like, yeah. I want to consume. And you know, the Latinos are willing to
But we get penalized. We get penalized if we want to buy from corporations that are doing things the right way. Mm-hmm. They're more expensive. And it's like...
But that's the real cost, because you will buy something once. You know, instead of buying before, like when we were growing up, my parents had a TV that is probably as old for the longest time until I kind of like was like, this TV needs to go. But that TV owed us nothing. It was like 40 years old or more. Like, there is things that were made to last you forever. And there is a strategies of companies. It's part of the strategy to build things that are descartables. They will break. So like, yes, to think of us, like, am I going to buy something of good quality of fair trade that benefits the people who produced it once yeah. and it's going to be more expensive? Or do I have to buy this every 2 months? Or every year, because my t-shirt it's raggedy and stuff and it washes and it stretches and it's ugly. So I'm going to buy 10 of them because that price ends up costing you more. Lo barato sale caro. Ends up costing you more. And it costs more in like other things that are not being accountable. If every corporation, and this is like an economic term, took care of their externalities, none of them will be profitable. We, the public, the states, end up fixing what they ruin. When corporations have an oil spill, they don't clean it. We clean it. Our tax dollars clean it.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that upsets
Ecuadorian communities sued Exxon, Chevron, and they have been in litigation for decades. Because they refuse to clean oil spills in our countries. In Africa, they have ruined the deltas of Nigeria. And so, like, they have caused the harm. It should be part of their cost. In Guatemala, the mining companies they pollute the water. And then they leave without paying taxes because of corruption. And our communities don't have water.
Well, I would also argue that, you know, the governments need to put a lot of more regulations so they don't come and basically.
But if you think of governments,
you know, squander our resources.
But if you think of the power of a multinational corporation versus the power of a country of Central America, it's not possible. Like the scales of power are different. We as consumers in the countries that have that economic power, and Latinos, what I was saying is we're willing to reward the companies that are doing things good, and we're willing to punish companies that are not doing things good. So our money is actually, we're trying to put our money where our mouth is, which I found really interesting. And I think that reflects that we are committed. We understand the problem, and we are committed to making sure our organizations have clean water, our communities have clean water, good food, clean air, and to look out for others, right? Because we think we've talked about this so many times. We care about our generations.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's great. Because we are awesome that way.
Yeah. And I think we care because right now in the United States, some of the communities that is experience some of these terrible things, and we recognize that we are a block that is growing, and we want our money to be spent in providing us that quality of life that we all deserve and that we have not cost. And I also always wonder, there is a lot of issues about, like, why is people coming to the United States? And you and I have said this in other episodes, like, the risks of staying somewhere where you cannot eat or drink or have food or security are much greater than taking that terrible trip to immigrate to somewhere, right? Latin Americans not only go to the United States, they go to Europe, and sometimes they go to other Latin American countries. We will do what we need to do to survive. What would it mean for us to be able to protect our lands, our resources, and to use them with care? I also want to make one last point that a lot of our indigenous communities, so a lot of our immigrants come from indigenous ancestry. They have a lot, like about 80% of the forests of the world, or like the natural areas of the world, are in they make like 5% of the world population if you think of indigenous people, and they take care of about 80% of the natural resources. So like they have for generations been stewarding our resources, and they don't have access to land. So I think that is what that's why the element of justice is so important for all of us to think about environmental and climate change and environmental issues. And I know that a lot of our younger generation is getting involved in it. It's really exciting. And I hope one day we can begin to recognize that there is a lot of economic potential in transitioning to a green economy that is gonna be the end of many jobs, but I'll think that a coal miner would rather work in a clean plant, like in a plant putting together social solar panel.
That's legal.
Solar panel instead of like smoking, all that stuff. I would rather not work there, right? Yeah. So I think that there is a lot of possibilities for us to continue to have a dignified life that not require us to continue to extract and abuse and no denigrar, pero dañar. To damage the environment at the rate that we're doing it. And we all have to be, when you say, what do we do? We need to get involved. And we are getting involved, which is super exciting.
Yay. And with that,
yes,
we're going to leave you. And I love this conversation. I could see the passion in you, and I could tell that, you're really into it and you really want this to work. And so I love this, and thank you for sharing your knowledge and your passion and
I appreciate it.
And your hope.
I do hope that, hope is, there is a saying from an activist named Maryam Kaba, and she's like, hope is a discipline. And I don't hope like wishful thinking.
So many quotes today, girl.
And hope is something that we have to work for every day. We have to be disciplined. And
I love it.
And
hope is a discipline. And what's legal? What? Yeah.
What is just? What is legal is not just.
May not be just.
No. They're not synonyms. Right. And we think about that. But yeah, so I think that I do have hope. I have hope because the planet is going to survive without us.
Oh, yeah.
It's whether we want to... What do we... We have the opportunity. We have time. Yeah. There is... The, you mentioned something early on, like political will.
Yeah.
And the political will to spend the money because the money exists to do it.
Yeah. And I mean... We are more vulnerable than we think.
Yes.
We think that we are invincible. No. The planet could have a correction. And have you guys seen those movies? I mean, yeah. It's not super far-fetched.
Yeah.
You know, so hey, take action. And let us know if you want to know how to get involved. You know, Ceci here is the expert. She can answer any questions.
We'll be
get in touch.
Happy to. Let us know what you think. Leave us a review.
Chancleta Generation on Instagram. On Twitter is Chancleta Gen. And then on TikTok, you know, you can see us, you know, saying our little,
spiel.
You know, little quotes.
Our spiel.
You can ask us questions there.
Yeah.
So if you like this podcast, let us know, share with your friends, give us a rating, and we will see you next week.
Absolutely.
Where we will be talking about more interesting things. I mean, at least to us. Así que whatever.
Así que whatever. Así que whatever. No, muchísimas gracias. And like Clem said, let us know what you think.
Chao.
Chao, mi amor. Nos vemos pronto.